Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from KeyBank, focused knowledge, customized solutions, and the resources of an entire bank. Because the best solutions fit around a business's needs. More at key.com/corporate. Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
It's really up to you which of the following you want to take as your personal economic indicator. Are you more interested in the stock market? The Dow is up almost 300 points today. Or do you like the price of a barrel of oil? Crude was off more than 4.5%. You pay your money, you take your chances. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Angie's List, providing thousands of reports on local service companies. These reports come directly from the experiences of the members themselves. AngiesList.com. Coverage of Asia is supported by the Freeman Foundation.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Good to have you here on this Monday. It's August 6th, and I know what you're going to say. What's the problem with falling oil prices, right? On the face of it, nothing. But step back for just a second. What if, as was the case today, crude's being dragged lower by worries over a weakening economy? Not so great now, is it? Just a week ago, we were telling you about record high crude prices. Now the oil markets are looking as jittery as stocks. Witness today's 286-point turnaround in the Dow, the fourth straight day of triple-digit gains or losses. Marketplace's Bob Moon tells us oil traders are hoping the subprime spillover doesn't become a gusher.
Today's 5% drop in oil prices, more than $3 a barrel, was the biggest slide since December of 2004. And some analysts were blaming worries the fallout from subprime mortgage defaults could lead to Americans consuming less energy. Brad Samples is a commodity analyst for Summit Energy Services.
If their discretionary spending, disposable income, is being cut into, that means that spending on the margin, so that little bit extra of driving they might have done, that vacation they might have taken somewhere, all of a sudden it doesn't look so affordable anymore. They need to sort of buckle down and keep their money for what they really need to spend it on, food items, basic expenses, heating their homes, and that sort of thing.
But not everybody is so worried. Citigroup energy analyst Tim Evans believes most of today's drop was speculators locking in their profits. He points out last week's record-setting rally in the oil markets just happens to coincide with the recent subprime news.
I think it's more of an excuse than a reason, if you want to phrase it that way. We're really just correcting an overvaluation in the market.
At PNC Financial Services, Chief Economist Stuart Hoffman agrees he doesn't think Federal Reserve policymakers will be convinced the economy is tanking when they meet on interest rates tomorrow, at least not enough to come to the rescue of risk-taking investors.
My guess is the Fed will say they continue to be still a bit more concerned about inflation, and they're not going to lower rates tomorrow despite all the begging and pleading from some people on Wall Street.
If anything, Hoffman says lower oil prices could reduce pricing pressures and allow the Fed to cut interest rates a few months from now without the fear of fueling inflation. In New York, I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
As Bob said, the Fed meets tomorrow. For those who like to plan ahead, you know, if nothing happens on rates this time, the next meeting is set for the 18th of September. The White House got largely what it wanted out of lawmakers before Congress adjourned for its August recess. The president signed an extension of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act yesterday. It lets the government expand on what it's already doing, eavesdropping on international calls and emails without a warrant. Marketplace's Lisa Napoli takes a closer look now at what else was included and what was left out of that 11th-hour legislation.
Say the government decides it wants a record of all phone calls, emails, faxes, and text messages that come in and out of the United States from India for a given week. Now it can order phone companies and internet providers to give up those records without presenting a court order.
The law permits the government to access all communications in which one person is believed to be abroad.
That's Lisa Graves of the National Center for Security Studies. She says for their time and trouble in helping Uncle Sam, communications companies will get one thing they wanted in return, financial compensation from the government. The exact dollar amount isn't clear, but what the telecoms wanted and didn't get was legal immunity. They've recently been in the crosshairs from civil liberties groups for their cooperation with a growing number of government spy programs. Mark Rotenberg is with the Electronic Privacy Information Center.
They don't want to be exposed in terms of liability if it turns out that they were violating federal wiretap laws by helping the government.
The president said when he signed the bill that he hopes the telecoms will eventually get the legal break they want. He said eavesdropping programs like this one are essential to the fight against terrorism. The fight for the privacy rights issues won't stop with enactment of this law. It's only on the books for 6 months, and Congress is expected to take a look at it again after summer vacation. In Los Angeles, I'm Lisa Napoli for Marketplace.
Farming experts over in Britain are breathing just a little bit easier today. They say the latest outbreak of hoof and mouth disease appears to have been contained. No new cases since last Friday. So far, infection has been confined to a single farm south of London, and only 100 or so cattle have had to be slaughtered. But Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports the outbreak could hurt the UK's wider rural economy.
As soon as he heard the news of the outbreak, Prime Minister Gordon Brown broke off his summer vacation and raced back to London to take control.
We realise there's very difficult decisions to make in this particular season when farmers are working very, very hard indeed. We hope that in a short period of time we can say that we've contained control and eradicated this disease.
Brown has taken immediate and drastic action to halt the spread of the disease, banning the movement of all cattle, sheep and pigs anywhere in the country. That will hit livestock farmers hard, says veterinary surgeon Phil Stimson.
Well, it could be quite devastating for all sorts of reasons. They can't move animals, they can't take them to slaughter for meat production, they can't sell them, so they're completely stuck.
A $4 billion a year industry still recovering from the last hoof and mouth epidemic has suffered another setback. But the government's more worried about damage to an even bigger industry, rural tourism, which earns $30 billion a year and supports 400,000 jobs. During the last epidemic, tourists were banned from visiting parts of the countryside, but not this time, since the outbreak seems to be confined. Environment Minister Hilary Benn.
The countryside, as they say, is open for business. It's important that people get out there, continue to take advantage of the facilities and help support the businesses that are very important to the rural economy. And that's a message I hope that will be heard loud and clear.
That will depend on whether Britain's latest hoof and mouth outbreak has been stopped in its tracks. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Those falling oil prices in New York worked wonders for nervous equity investors. Gas futures dropped a dime as well. Roll that all in with some plain old bargain hunting and you got yourself a rally. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. The last time you heard the name Bob Nardelli, it was probably followed closely by the words $210 million. That's how much money Nardelli walked away with when the board of directors at Home Depot showed him the door back in January. As of today, Nardelli has a new gig. He's running the newly private Chrysler Cerberus. The private equity group closed its deal for the automaker Friday. Nardelli's getting paid a good deal less this time, $1 a year with a big incentive payment if the company turns around. But the news of the day is still turning some heads. Jeff Sonnenfeld's at the Yale School of Management. Professor Sonnenfeld, what were your thoughts when you heard?
Kai, frankly, I was stunned. This is a man who left in defeat and disgrace at the Home Depot and is the poster child of excess CEO compensation, and his reputation was in tatters for poor performance. You would have thought that Chrysler could have done better, especially since Chrysler's come off a whole sequence of CEOs that have disappointed them.
He's got, it seems to me, a couple of things he really has to work on. One is Chrysler's already in-place turnaround plan, $3 billion in restructuring, 13,000 layoffs. The other is the United Auto Workers and negotiations over a new long-term contract with them. How do you think that's going to go?
It's stunning. You're so right. It's a week ago that they opened negotiations with the auto workers. So here you have a guy who doesn't have an amicable relationship with the rank and file, who now has come in, and you'll have a series of product failures that the union is painfully aware of. And the union, of course, is aware that this is a guy who had previously been well overpaid and underperformed. That it's not going to be a winning formula. And Chrysler, of all the automakers in the U.S. right now, has developed a bit more of a maverick and an employee-focused voice. They really expect to be heard.
Do you think it's an opportunity for the unions here to get some gains?
Well, I think the unions are as shocked as the rest of us. And I think that they recognize that the good old days of collaboration are over, that they're going to have to be ready to bargain tough and hard and take strong positions because they have somebody who is not a conciliatory peacemaker.
All right. Well, then I have to ask you, all of that said, why did Bob Nardella get this job?
This is a company that likes splash. Their former chairman, they put in Dan Quayle, Vice President Quayle. They go for a high-profile, audacious style. Number two, this is a guy who was a legendary good operator at GE that just didn't find his footing at Home Depot. And their belief is maybe this is a process, a manufacturing business, that he'll have a new shot at it. He is a bright, talented guy. He's not one of the rogue CEOs that plundered shareholder wealth. And he's on a mission to prove that he's different than the people he's been grouped with.
Does it matter that he's not a car guy?
I think it matters a lot because this is an extremely complicated business. People who've moved in from the outside, such as the CEO of Ford, have very, very quick to acknowledge it's a far more complicated business than they expected. They've got a lot of different industries and technologies come together, a lot of different time frames, so they have very difficult juggling acts, and he's not been in an environment as complicated as this one. And what's really going to make a difference, people in this industry tell me repeatedly, and I agree, is the quality of the management team that knows the industry that he has reporting to him. If he repeats his history and surrounds himself with platoons of GE soldiers, then he's going to have a problem. If he uses people who really know the business, he's got a chance, and if he learns to listen.
If Chrysler were still a public company, there would be a time horizon. He'd have a year, 2 years to turn this thing around. Do you think Cerberus is going to let him sit in there for a while and work on it?
Cerberus, I think, will have him on a very short time horizon as well. It'll be, I would think, not much more than 12 months to see what he does.
Jeff Sonnenfeld at the Yale School of Management. He's got a new book out about CEOs coming back from the brink. It's called Firing Back. Professor Sonnenfeld, thanks a lot for your time.
Sure, thank you.
United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is in Haiti today. He said he wants to keep almost 9,000 UN peacekeepers in place there for another year. Those peacekeepers have been giving Haiti what little stability it's had lately. Aside from that bit of political good news, there is economic promise for the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, too. Gold futures closed today at $683 an ounce, almost triple the price of 5 years ago. Reed Lindsay reports that has foreign prospectors showing up looking for a lucky strike.
On a scrubby hillside in northeast Haiti, geologist Keith Laskowski chisels out a chunk of reddish rock with his pick and squints at it through a magnifying lens.
And that is silica, which is often associated with gold.
Laskowski works for Eurasian Minerals, a small prospecting company based in Canada. He's traveled all over the world in search of gold, but he says this is the most promising mining claim he's ever seen.
I don't think it's a question of whether there's a good deposit here. It's a question of whether we can develop it here in Haiti.
Part of the problem is Haiti's political chaos. Over the last two decades, it's had coups, dictators, and death squads. Since the last copper mine closed in the early 70s, investors have generally steered clear. There's never been an industrial gold mine in Haiti. But with gold prices soaring in recent years, geologists are increasingly coming here. Their companies are also encouraged by the election of a new government in Haiti, as Laskowski explains.
We started investing in Haiti after the last democratic election. We took that election as a sign that Haiti's on a positive course for stability and development. Oh, that was That hit me.
Did you?
Lightning bolt.
What's that?
Lightning just zipped me. Let's get the hell out of here.
Lightning strikes on exposed hillsides are not Laskowski's only worry. There are treacherous roads, a lack of electricity, and corruption, even in the new government. The town of La Miel lies downhill from Eurasian's excavations. Most people in La Miel are subsistence farmers. There's no clean drinking water here, no doctors either. Suzanne Louis is a community leader and the wife of a farmer. She complains that Eurasian's geologists haven't explained what they're doing or how they're going to help improve life in La Miel.
If they don't help us, we're going to rise up and make them explain the work they're doing. They need to sit down with the people together to let us know what decision they've made for the area. If they don't do this, we're not going to let them exploit us as they'd like.
Before there's any exploitation, before there are any investors, Eurasian must prove it really has found gold in Haiti, and lots of it. Alex Turkeltaub is a mining analyst specializing in emerging markets.
Junior mining companies are notorious for talking up their properties, and it's an industry that has as many stories of overpromised resources as there are stories of discovering huge deposits when no one expected them.
Laskowski believes his company has found gold and copper reserves in Haiti that could be worth billions of dollars. But he warns it would take at least 4 years before any actual mining could begin. By then, gold will have a different price and Haiti a different government. In La Miel, Haiti, I'm Reed Lindsay for Marketplace.
Coming up, video gamers become rockers with just a flick of the switch.
We can link up online, form a completely online band with a singer in a different state, have a band logo, and actually compete in a battle of the bands.
But first, let's do the numbers. Volatility, thy name is Wall Street. The Dow Industrials up 286 points today, 2.1% to close at 13,468. The NASDAQ rose 36 points, 1.4% to finish at 2547. The S&P 500 climbed 34 points, 2.4% there to end at 1467. Some financial stocks did well on analyst upgrades and expectations of decent earnings. Merrill Lynch lurched up nearly 6.5%. UBS upgraded the brokerage. Brokerage Bear Stearns clawed itself a 5% gain. Health stocks also took a salutary turn. When was the last time you heard that on the radio? Salutary. They had their best performance in 3 weeks. United Health Group, the largest U.S. medical insurer, rose more than 2%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, recognizing the value of financial advice since 1937. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Ever hear a song on Marketplace, but you just can't place it? Or maybe it's the first time you've heard it and you want to hear it again. Just click on the archive section of our website. We list the songs we play on every show in that day's rundown. There's even a link to an online store where you can buy the song and help fund public radio programming. It's all at marketplace.org.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a glance at what's coming up Tuesday. In Washington, the Federal Reserve Board reports on consumer credit for June. The Federal Open Market Committee meets to discuss interest rates. And it's National Night Out. Not a night on the town, but a night for crime prevention block parties with your neighbors and community law enforcers. Organizers expect over 35 million people to participate nationally. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. Walmart has finally found a way into the Indian retail market. Foreign-owned big box stores are generally barred from selling direct to consumers there. So Walmart signed a deal today setting up a joint venture with a local outfit to take care of that rule. Not every country, of course, has such concerns about warehouse-style retailers. In Germany, there are plenty of big box stores, including one geared specifically to the over-60 crowd. Kyle James reports it's a perfect mix of marketing and demographics.
In a nondescript building about an hour south of Berlin, an audience seated at tables enjoys the last bites of cake while models backstage adjust their skirts and tie their scarves. The fashion show is about to begin. Frau Schütz walks out on the runway in a linen jacket and skirt. She's no Kate Moss. She's well on the other side of 50, and her figure? Proudly Rubenesque. Her bright skirt is a polyester blend, and the shoes, while fairly stylish, are still on the sensible side.
Dankeschön.
That's fine with this crowd, who arrived by coach bus. They're in their early 60s to mid-80s, and they've come to have a look at a store of their own, a big box shop called the Deliga Senior Store that caters to their retail needs over 8,000 square feet of floor space. Christa Putzke heads up the sales team.
But seniors also want chic and stylish things, but they can't fit into these super mini, extra, extra small things they find in other stores. The whole market needs to adjust to the realities we're seeing in Germany.
Germany's future has a definite silver tinge to it, with longer lifespans and a low birth rate. Right now, about 1 in 5 Germans is over the age of 60. By 2050, that will be 1 in 3. With age come physical changes, which the senior store takes into consideration. Besides the larger clothing sizes, Velcro fasteners, and shoes with non-slip soles, there are no steps here that could be a problem for wheelchairs or walkers. Changing rooms are large with places to sit inside, and there's a big assortment of non-clothing items as well.
Es ist 12:02.
Alarm clocks that talk, magnifying screens for TV sets, canes, telephones with large-size buttons, and kitchen utensils with grips easier for arthritic hands to handle. Matthias Riepen has just come on board as manager.
Seniors don't have to go to different stores to get what they need. It's all concentrated here. That's the big advantage, and that's why I think this retail concept will work.
Elisabeth Westphal, who's 62, is buying a pair of support socks. She can certainly imagine this senior store concept catching on.
If retail people focus on what customers need, some people see young people as the future. But I think in the next 20 years, older people are going to have a lot of potential when it comes to buying power.
They've already got a fair amount. Estimates vary, but most put it at around $426 billion and going up. Manager Matthias Riepen is about to take the senior store to the next level. He's relaunching in September under a new name. The Senior is going to disappear, and updating the inventory a little. Then he's embarking on a franchising system and hopes to have at least 3 more stores open next year. Back on the sales floor, the group is making purchases before getting back on the bus. Werner Bernau, 72, watches as his wife pays for 2 blouses. He liked the store, but was a little lukewarm on the senior citizen fashion show. It was fine, he says. Of course, it would have been more fun to watch models who were a little thinner, don't you think? In Großrechen, Germany, I'm Kyle James for Marketplace.
The hottest thing in video games isn't some blood-soaked first-person shooter rampage, and it most definitely isn't from traditional video game leader Electronic Arts. It's a guitar game, if you can believe it, from the lesser-known producer Activision, and it's helped Activision knock EA off as the number one game seller. Kevin Pereira follows technology for G4 Television. Kevin, how are you?
Doing very well, thank you.
So tell me about this Activision-EA thing. I mean, is it a very big deal that this has happened, or is it just sort of, you know, natural course of events?
No, this is an absolutely huge deal. I mean, you've got EA, which was the third-party publisher powerhouse. They've never been dethroned, and out comes this new genre of game that takes the country by storm, and now everybody's playing with plastic guitars in their living room, and suddenly Activision's got treasure chests full of cash.
We'll get to this guitar thing in a minute, and I guess I'm going to have to try this.
Is that what you're telling me?
All right. We'll get to it in just a second. But, EA has been so big for so long, and that's really the only name that people who are only peripherally familiar with gaming know about it. Is EA done, or is this just the beginning of a war?
No, EA is far from done. In fact, they've got their own game to kind of counteract against the Guitar Hero franchise, which has taken the world by storm. They've got a game called Rock Band coming out at the end of this year, which was actually by one of the original creators of Guitar Hero, a company called Harmonix.
All right, so even though this is a radio studio, we've got a television in here, and it's loading up. This is the demo portion of the evening.
All right,
so it looks like a little kid's toy plastic guitar.
Sure does. It's a miniature version of a guitar, it's got five buttons on the fretboard, and those are essentially your different notes or chords as you play.
Right.
It has a whammy bar, so you can actually put a little effect, a little rock sauce, if you will, on a note to earn some extra points. A plastic strum bar that actually lets you trigger the notes. And then it's got a tilt sensor in the guitar. So when you build up enough star power, you can actually turn the guitar up and earn some extra points.
Do you get Jimi Hendrix points for back behind the head?
You don't. You can't. If you play with your teeth, yeah. There's a bonus points multiplier that'll come on. But you have to have the rock stance for the tilt sensor to work.
So these little notes that you see on the screen, they are roughly analogous to that bouncing ball in the karaoke game, right?
Correct. It's exactly what it is.
All right. So hit me with a beginner level thing.
I'm passing the plastic axe.
That's right. The plastic.
So go ahead. This is your first time playing, correct?
Yeah.
All right. So we're gonna see how intuitive it is. I would recommend using the guitar strap.
All right. So we'll do the police here. Message.
Bob. All right, so now go ahead and hit the green fret button there.
Maybe I'll miss one on purpose. Oh, come on! Oh, you have to.
And now the shouting begins.
All right, can we slow this down?
But now understand, this is a completely different gaming experience than you've ever played.
Yeah,
it's not
it
a controller,
is.
And
there you go.
You're rocking it and talking.
So a couple of thoughts. This really reminds me of that experiential feeling you get playing Wii, which I did, you know, a month ago for the first time,
right.
Where you're really sort of into it and you're moving your whole body. Is that sort of the way these games are going now? It's not just sitting there with a controller staring at a screen?
It's exactly what it is. You know, gaming was seen as this almost passive activity, even though it's quite active. You're
right.
Using, you know, hand-eye coordination and you're being involved, you're being interactive with the television, but it was seen as this passive thing where people wanted to zone out and sit on their couches. And now, you know, game makers and publishers are realizing, no, you know what? These are social experiences. People want to get up. They want to have fun with their friends, something a little more interactive. And music, especially, is a great way to get that going.
You touched on it a couple of times. So EA is coming back with now a competitor to this, which is Rock Band. Is that going to have online connectivity? So, you know,
Correct.
You can have a friend in San Francisco and a guy in Detroit, and you can all sort of get together online and play?
Sure, sure. Well, there's a couple main selling points for Rock Band. One of them is additional instruments. So you can actually have an entire band. There's a microphone, which can also be used as a tambourine or a cowbell. There's, of course, a bass guitar, which is the same peripheral, and now drums. And the beauty of that is I'm a drummer. I have the drum set. My buddy and guitarist in Texas, we can link up online, form a completely online band with a singer and a different state, have a band logo, and actually compete in a battle of the bands.
Absolutely. And getting it back to the marketplace of it for just a second, all those little accessories, price not included, right?
They add up. And that's the thing, that the price has not been announced on Rock Band. I mean, some analysts are saying a minimum of $200 for the game, a guitar, a microphone, and the drum kit. You still need an extra guitar, and if you're playing on the 360 and you want to go wireless, it's going to be an additional fee.
Absolutely. Kevin Pereira from G4 Television, attack of the show. Thanks a lot, Kevin.
Thank you.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, where a well-thought-out allocation strategy can strengthen your portfolio. Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication.
Just for the record, that guitar thing, a lot harder than it sounded, people. I got to tell you, a lot harder. Anyway, this final note, you pay 99 cents a song on iTunes, about a nickel in certain Russian digital music stores. But have you ever stopped and wondered why? Amazon.com is investing in an answer to that question, hoping to provide a little rhyme and reason to the digital music market. The company has partnered with AmiStreet.com, that's A-M-I-E Street.com, a website that prices music according to popularity. The song posted there starts out free, 0 cents. The price starts going up as soon as somebody buys it. Would-be pop billionaires beware, though there is a cap, the highest a song can go is an un-Apple-like 98 cents apiece. And that's Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow shot up 286 points, 2.1%. The NASDAQ, 36 points up. The S&P, 534 points to the positive. Our producers include Megan Larson, Caitlin Carroll, Jennifer Collins, and Fiona Ng. Marketplace was created by Jim Russell. Next time, history lovers take to the road in search of the past.
In the past 10 years, the heritage tourist has really become kind of the darling of the tourism industry.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
all over the country.
We need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.